Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-Step Recovery and Rum Radio. RumRadio.org is the website, and Rum Radio is the show. We have two. We have a Rum Radio on the Sober Couch Network on Saturday nights, and this is the Rum Radio show direct. I thought I'd keep this going also. It gives me an opportunity to talk. You know, Shakespeare said, "Better be thought the fool and speak and remove all doubt." And, of course, Jesus said, "It's not what goes into a man's mouth that defileth him, it's what comes out." Talking will do it to you every time. What I've noticed in my life is that I'm a good talker, and I've always been able to I talk myself into trouble, and sometimes I even talk my way out of it. If there was a balance sheet, I would have been much better off not talking at all. Using my conversations as yay and nay probably would have been more than sufficient to my needs. Tonight we're going to talk about the earliest time of alcoholism. In the program of AA, we call it when man first crushed grapes. The point is that as long as alcohol has been on in the world, and man has figured out how to ferment the grape. I believe it wasn't even wine was the original. I believe beer was the first that we know of that came out of Egypt. 4,000, 5,000, maybe even 6,000 years ago. I think they found a broken Budweiser bottle somewhere in the pyramids. And the fermentation of hops, I think it was, led to beer, and then eventually wine, and then stronger spirits. Spirits. Dr. Jung, J-U-N-G, Jung, contemporary of Sigmund Freud, had postulated, that means it was his best guess, that alcohol was a lower form of spirituality. I've always been fascinated by that concept, and I feel there's a truth to that. We're always seeking a higher level of enlightenment. And that enlightenment usually means a conscious contact with the spiritual. And spiritual, we mean usually God, or God as we understood God, or the infinite, the ethereal, something outside of ourselves. A validation of a realm not otherwise able to experience. And, of course, alcohol gave you a sense of being otherworldly in that sense, beyond yourself, greater than yourself, bigger than yourself. Of course, the word self comes in an awful lot, and we believe that self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity was our problem, driven by a form of 100 fears of fear and fear and the disillusion. We stepped on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliated. So it's all about me. John Barleycorn is mentioned in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. John Barleycorn. Well, that's we're not gonna go chronological, but we're gonna go back to the 13th century with John Barleycorn. I believe that's the first time he's actually mentioned in verse. Might have been sooner than that. I don't know. I guess you could Google it. I think 1,000 years from now, when the anthropologists are digging around the ruins of our civilization, they'll come to the agreement that they all pray to an all-knowing God named Google. Google is fascinating, and Ask It and all those. Most people use Google, and I think that's the most comprehensive of the sites. I don't know for sure, but it seems to be the case. And questions that I would normally not even consider to ask would be, I'm hearing a dead air. What do I got dead air? Do I got dead air here? I guess I'm okay. I'm getting a hum of some kind, and I don't know where it came from. I hope nobody's hearing that other than me, but I can't tell. Where was I? John Barleycorn. You go to Google and you could find out if it's anything older, but this was a rock and roll song made by Traffic, a popular rock and roll artist, and this was a 13th century dirge. A dirge is sort of like a song created for funerals, a death of something. It was a dirge. Really is not used very much anymore, but they came up with this. And what they did was they put it to music, but the song had already been there. The lyrics are already available, and it was sung by minstrels. And it was a tongue-in-cheek dirge. It was the death of John Barleycorn. Barley and corn fermented makes alcohol. So they called him Sir John. There were three men that came out of the West, their fortunes for to try. And these three men made a solemn vow, John Barleycorn must die. Wow, they were trying to get rid of him even back then. Here we are in the 13th century, so he's raised such havoc that they've decided, okay, how are we going to get rid of this guy? We're going to have to. We had the temperance movement and prohibition in the modern era. Women have been trying to get rid of this for years. I mean, women are partakers also, but they seem to have had the harder time with it. Their men would go out and not feed the children, not be able to keep a job. Women seem to be always in the forefront of getting rid of John Barleycorn. They've sown, they've harrowed him in, threw clods upon his head. And these three men made a solemn vow, John Barleycorn was dead. So they plowed him into the ground. They've sown him into the ground. They harrowed him into the, I believe that means they cover him up. They threw clods upon his head. And these three men made a solemn vow. John Barleycorn was dead. That's it. He's dead now. We got him. He's in the ground. John Barleycorn's in the ground. They let him lie for a very long time, till the rains from heaven did fall. And little Sir John sprung up his head and so amazed them all. He sprung up right after the rains. They let him stand till Midsummer's Day. Midsummer's Night's Dream. To Midsummer's Day, till he looked both pale and wan. And little Sir John grown a long, long beard and became a man. Shaving was a tough go back then, so to be a man, you had a beard. Boys didn't grow beards. Only men could have a beard. And pale and wan, he was discolored yet, but he was growing his beard, so he became a man. They hired men with scythes so sharp. You know what a scythe is. It's the Grim Reaper. A scythe to cut grass and wheat. They hired men with scythes so sharp to cut him off at the knee. Ooh. They rolled him and tied him by the waist, serving him most barbarously. Yeah, we're going to get him now. We got him. We're cutting him up. They hired men with sharp pitchforks who pricked him to the heart. And the loader, he served them worse than that. For he bound him to the cart, tied him up, bundled him up, threw him in the cart. We're in control now. They wheeled him around and around the field till they came unto a barn. And there they made a solemn oath. Oh, poor Jolly, oh, on. They made a solemn oath. In AA, we make a lot of solemn oaths. We make solemn oaths that we're never going to drink again. This is the last time. Solemn and unsolemn. They made a solemn on poor John Barleycorn. They swore on him. They hired men with crabtree sticks to cut his skin from bone. Not sure what a crabtree stick is. I believe it's some kind of sharp implement that scrapes the husk. And the miller, and the miller, he mills things. And the miller, he had served them worse than that, for he ground him between two stones. Grinding him up. And little Sir John in the nut brown bowl, and the brandy in the glass. And little Sir John in the nut brown bowl proved the strongest man at last. The huntsman, he can't hunt the fox, nor so loudly blow his horn. And the tinker, he can't mend kettle nor pot without a little barley corn. I knew that a little different. When I learned that it was, and the tinker can't dam neither kettle nor pot without a little barley corn. They'd make a little clay dam and then pour metal to that, and that's how they would seal the metal. So that's the 13th century. So, well, let's see. How far back can we go? So we had the Egyptians. Let's see about the Bible. What does the Bible got to say? I mean, the Bible's been around forever, right? I mean, it's 3,000 years, I think, right? Jesus was around a couple thousand years ago, and before that, got at least another 2,000. The Grape, A Crushing Romance. I came across this. This was interesting, the way I came across this. In AA, it says that our sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of a daily spiritual condition. And, of course, my question always is, and still is, what maintains itself of itself? And I say this often because it's kind of a quandary. Nothing of itself maintains itself. You're either growing spiritually or you're declining spiritually. And if you're declining spiritually, your recovery, if not your sobriety, becomes tentative. In other words, how long can you tread water, Noah? You're either swimming to the shore or you're swimming out to sea. So having said that, I read scriptures. I enjoy reading my scriptures. I get a lot out of it. They're living scriptures to me. I don't espouse it in an AA meeting. That's not where it belongs. Although some of it, you know, in the early AA, the Bible was one of their tenets. They didn't have the big book originally. They had the Bible. They had the four absolutes, and they had the six steps from the Oxford group. Dr. Bob says, look, we have these things, and we have to do them. We don't need the traditions. So this was new in AA. This was all new. So the Bible was a big part of recovery back then. Now, we've opened it up because we understood, and I say we, the people who, in AA, early back when, the pioneers realized that some folks don't believe the Bible. They don't believe in God. There's atheists, agnostics, the Jew, the Gentile, Islam, and everything in between. That's not our function to tell you who and what God looks like. All we suggest to you is that you find something that has a power greater than yourself. We call it a higher power. And as an alcoholic, some alcoholics get as high as they possibly, not any higher than they possibly need. They'll get the minimal higher power. And you know what? My experience is God is bigger than that, and he's not going to be insulted because you haven't been formally introduced. That's going to come in your time and your way, not on my time, not on his time, on your time. You will take the step forward. He will take the step towards you. But and like in kindergarten, like Bill W. said, AA is a spiritual kindergarten, and we take baby steps. You can't give them meat for milk they must drink. For if you try to give them meat, they will perish. They're not ready for the expanse of all this. The God of the universe understood that. That's why we have AA. Boy, ta-da! Okay, this I came across this. I had a sponsee, and Stephen. And Stephen turned around to me early on, and I do my little shtick. When I pick out a new sponsee, I see somebody new into the program, and they come in, and they get their beginner's chip. And to me, that's hot. They're hot. They're red hot. And I go up to them after the meeting. They get their chip because they've done something. They took the step. You know, I believe we're saved by grace after all that we can do, not after all that we can talk, not after all that we can think, not even after all that we can pray. The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. So they took the step, and they picked up their beginner's chip. And I'll go up to them afterwards and introduce myself and say, have you had enough? Yes or no? Some will say, what do you mean? And I'll say, have you had enough? And they usually know by the second time what I mean. But if they don't, I explain to them, have you had enough pain? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough? Have you had enough? So if they say yes, the next thing they... the next thing I ask them is, are they willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? If it's yes, they're willing to go to any length. They're making a commitment. And it's not so much making a commitment to me, but they're making a commitment to themselves. They're reinforcing what I'm asking them in their subconscious. Yes, I am. Yes, I have. With that commitment, I tell them, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I need you to do is I carry Clancy's 7 questions. And it's really, they're really good. I read them on the show Friday night. And I would suggest go to rumradio.org if you're listening, what that sounds like, what they look like. And I tell them, the first thing I need you to do, you can get well, but there's certain things you have to do. And I can't do it for you. So we don't take responsibility to get them sober. We don't take responsibility if they drink. What we share is our experience, strength, and hope. But we have little tips, tricks, techniques, understandings that seem to work better than others. Everybody's a little different, so you play a little bit by ear, and that comes with experience of being a sponsor. You know how you get to be a good sponsor? You have to sponsor people. You're going to make mistakes. You're human. The more you do it, the better you're going to get at it, the more you're going to understand human little behaviors and get to see yourself sometimes in these people and these sponsees that you work with. It's really quite a privilege to do that. It reinforces your own sobriety. The one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. That's it. So it's helping to keep me sober by working with the other guy. So they're willing that they did that, and I give them Clancy 7 questions, and off we go. And then if I get the call the next day, they've gotten some simple instruction, and they follow through. I don't have to worry about what he's doing, if he's not doing. If I don't get him back, I usually feel, and it's not like I'm going to get him back in a couple, 3 days or 2 weeks from now. But usually I'll either see them again or I won't see them again. If I see them again, they'll go, oh, just saw that the other day. John turned around to me and he goes, oh, hi, Joseph. He says, yeah, we need to sit down and talk. And off he went. He was kind of embarrassed that he didn't follow through with it. But, you know, he's just not there. So I don't say anything, fine. If they do come back, which I haven't really had, and a couple days later, one guy couldn't do it because of a dire circumstance, but by the time we connected, he already found another sponsor. The way I look at it is that I'm not the guy for him, and that was God telling me that this guy isn't for me. He needs to get a different sponsor. It's not going to work out for the two of us. Although I'm open, I mean, if there's extenuating circumstances, always, but I found that if they're really serious, they can do it. If you're going to drink and drug, it's as simple as if you were going to go get that the bottle of alcohol, or you were going to go get a drink, or you were going to go get that piece of crack, or whatever you were going to do, there wasn't too much in the planet that was going to stop you if you really wanted it. And it's with that passion and with that fervor of desire that you need to get into recovery with the same energy that you did about drinking and drugging. If you do, it'll work. If you don't, well, it works for some folks, but what I found is that timely is more important than thorough. There's a balance between the two, but I like to catch them when they're hot, and I use pain as a fuel to get them through. Does it work all the time? Absolutely not. Does it work most of the time? Yeah, more or less. Most of the folks I work with end up with long-term sobriety as far as I know. I don't know how many men that I've sponsored, quite a few over the years, quite a few. I don't keep numbers. I don't keep lists. You know, and I hear from them from time to time, and years go by, and, you know, they've gotten another sponsor, or they're here, or they're there, but they're still staying sober. And that's not because of me. That's because they have made a conscious contact with God. God and their agreement keeps them sober, not me. I have a hard enough time taking care of me. Trust me on that. So, Stephen, back to Stephen. Stephen calls up and he goes, he does his questions. Okay, so we get started. But he's got a problem. So what's the problem, Stephen? He says, well, I think I'm more of a sex addict than an alcoholic. Maybe I should go to SA. That's Sex Addicts Anonymous, SAA. I says, well, that could be. I says, but why don't we do this? Since it's the 12 steps of the 12 steps. And you did come in here with an alcohol problem. Let's work on this and see how it washes out. See, to me, the biggest thing is get into the steps right away. Everything else will flush out in time. The steps, the 12 steps, are basically all the same for all the addictions. The difference is the experience with that particular addiction. Whether it's sex addiction or cocaine or alcohol or whatever it is, the experience is a little different. It's harder to get, you know, sometimes it's harder to get illegal drugs. Alcohol is on every street corner. So you have that experience difference. And, you know, so there's a little, the nuances like that. But an addiction to me is an addiction. It can be fleshed out with experience and time. I've gotten to be a pretty good sex dealie too, because I've been working with the guys and I've had my own personal experiences. So I says, well, let's get started. The next morning, right, he agreed to that. The next morning, and during my regular scripture study, I come across this. This was my next reading. It started off with in the 23rd proverb. Let's see if I can pull this out quick. Proverbs, okay. It's in the 23rd proverb, which I thought it was interesting because the 23rd psalm is probably the most known psalm. That's psalm in the world. That's the yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. And I think it's probably said, that psalm is probably said on just about every funeral, Jew and Gentile, in the world. If there's a scripture read, that usually is the one. So I came across this, and it starts off with sex addiction. It's a father talking to a son, and he's giving him advice. If any of you are familiar with Hamlet, it's when Thelonious, who's the prime minister in, let's see, where is it? The Norway, right? Danes, the Danish court. He's telling his son Laertes and giving him advice. And this is a father giving a son advice. Now, we don't know exactly who wrote this proverb. Now, the proverbs were given to Solomon. But they were written over time, like the Psalms were. But the Proverbs were given to Solomon and a gathering of wise men who put the Proverbs together. Little pound for pound, probably some of the most interesting and informative verses in the Bible. To me, pound for pound. So he starts out with his son. And starts out verse 27, which is interesting because it's talking about sex addiction. And then it gets into alcoholism. If you're an alcoholic, you'll recognize it. So it starts, for a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lieth in wait as for a prey, and increases the transgressors among men. So prostitutes. So they're prostitutes and women of limited morality. And they draw men in. And a deep ditch and a narrow pit, we dig a pit and fall therein and roll a stone and it rolls back upon us. In other words, okay, they're going to grab you and they're going to pull you in. Sounds like pornography. Okay, and then it goes into... that's the two verses, 27, 28, 29. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? Well, if you're an alcoholic like me, who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? It's a hangover, guys. Isn't that simple? Wounds without cause. Redness of eyes. Contending with someone. Contending. Contention is of the devil. You're contending because it's all about self. They that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine. Who's the better? They that tarry long at the wine, that they go to seek mixed wine. Okay. Let's see. What did I put there? It's last call for alcohol. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. None of that watered down wine you give to the tourists. I want the real thing. Mixed wine is interesting. Back then, most people drank wine. I think it's like a Beaujolais or a new wine. And what they mean by a new wine is that it hasn't really fermented much. Just enough. And the reason why they drank this wine was because of the alcohol content in it. But it had a very little alcohol content. Just enough to kill the bacteria. Fresh water was really quite a treat, especially if you lived in the cities. Everything was polluted. There was no, you know, the sanitary laws and the dietary laws came up for the Jews for a particular reason, because it was pretty funky. So the reason why you drank the new wine was because the bacteria would kill, alcohol would kill the bacteria, and you would be able to drink water. But the mixed wine, now, wait a minute now, that's a wine of a different color. The mixed wine had really to do with stronger wines. Well, the more mixed wine with the darker red wines that had been fermented for a long time, and their alcohol content would go up. So you wanted to, hey, never mind about that. I'm not looking for a drink of water, kid. Look now that upon the wine when it is red. when it giveth this color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. That was a little tough. That was a little harder to understand. I understand the darker the red, the more alcohol. And then if it was a big cup, the darker the red it would be, and the more the alcohol content, the deeper the red. When it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. When it moveth itself aright. Oh, I get it now. That's the big deep cup. Fill her up with the good stuff. I might be a little tipsy, but my wine will always know which way is up. I might be moving back and forth, but liquid always seeks its own level, always to the horizon. So it moveth itself aright. I'm moving. The wine staying flat to the horizon. At last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Okay, well, serpents are usually pretty dangerous, and an adder is deadly. So it bites like it's dangerous and it's deadly. Okay, so it's a little dangerous, might be even a little deadly. I can handle it, no problem. Then I shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. Hey, good looking, I don't know you, but you called to me. I like to swing on your back porch. Can you think of a better way to get to know somebody? Those are some of my best lines. I don't think that too much has to be said about that. Usually when inhibitions are gone, there's no inhibitions. You're looking for company. Yea, that shall be as the lieth down in the midst of the sea, or he that lieth upon the top of a mast. Guys thought a lot about this stuff. Okay, if you're an alcoholic and you're drunk and you lay down, the room starts to spin. And it moves up and down, just like if you were in the midst of the sea. Whoa! And you sling your leg across the floor to steady it. Upon the top of a mast, the room spins as I lay my head down. I throw my leg on the floor to steady the swerve of the curve. Sometimes it's so violent, I feel like I'm going to be flung out of the crow's nest and onto the deck. The mast is going to act like a fulcrum. It's going to move even faster than the ship below it. So you're really getting whipped around. This is the most interesting verse in this. And this is right out of the King James Version of the Bible. This tells me that there's only one way one person could have wrote this. That person was an alcoholic. Who it was, I don't know. He was sexually addicted and an alcoholic. Now, we know Solomon, and, you know, forgiveness if I alluding to the wrong guy, and I don't think it was him. Could have been. He had the thing with girls. There's no toy about it. That was his downfall, was women's. But about the alcohol, it's never mentioned in the scripture. So this might not have been him. It could have been, but we don't know. But I know there was something with girls. He had to deal with girls. I think 500 wives kind of gives you a clue. The room spins as I lay my head. Okay, the crow's nest. They have stricken me, shalt thou say. So I'm saying, hey, man, I was stricken, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Don't you remember you were a mess? They beat you up. You really don't remember? You're sick, and you don't feel a thing anymore. It's like a nightmare that won't end. No matter what, I can't stop, for I will need to drink once more. That's the 23rd proverb, starting on verse, what was the verse? I think 26, 27. With the son, give me thy heart, and my thine observe my ways. So the father's telling the son what he's gone through to save his son from this deadly disease. Of course, knowledge is not going to do it. Pain is not going to do it. As much as people who are not alcoholics can't understand. And it's not because they won't understand. They just can't. They have a sympathy. They can be sympathetic to the plight of an addict, but they can't be empathetic because they haven't lived it. They'll put down a drink of alcohol with half a glass. To an alcoholic, it's almost sacrilegious. Beyond the concept, when a normal drinker turns around and says, "Oh, I have to stop now. I'm starting to feel it." The alcoholic is beyond his understanding because we drink so we can feel it. So how people drink like that, and if you're a real alcoholic and somebody leaves a drink and you're disturbed by that, or you finish the drink or what have you, you might consider that there's something going on. If you're thinking about when you had your last drink, when you're going to have your next drink. Now, when I say drink, I'm talking about addiction. Whatever that other addiction looks like, even if it's pornography, that kind of gets off, and folks in AA have a hard time with the other addictions sometimes, and they believe that we should stay closer into singleness of purpose, which is alcohol. But I really believe that the 12 steps are broader than that. But the AA is about people with specific experience to a specific addiction. And the other 12 sub-sister programs are on specific addictions in that arena. If you look at the 12 steps, only the first step mentions the addictive substance. That's it. All the other 11 steps are about the solution. So 1/12 is the problem, and 11/12 is the solution. Wow. So that's interesting to keep that in mind when you're dealing with alcoholism. Okay, let's see. Should I give out the number? We got 22 minutes left. It's guest call in 949-534-0621. Let me see. I had a couple calls, but I was so busy talking. Let's see, who do we got here? Oh, okay, we got a sponsee and receive calls. Let's see. Okay. All right. The guest call in number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. This would be interesting to discuss with some folks, but what are you going to do? So now we how further back do we go? I mean, we've gone all the way to Egypt. How long has this been a problem? Forever. Alcohol has been a problem forever. Why? Well, because it's a spiritual malady. I think Dr. Jung had it right on the head. It's a lower form of spirituality. Spirit is spiritum. Spirits are spirits. Call it demon rum. Spirits. I had a roommate, Charlie, had 23 years or 25 years of sobriety, and he said when he walked in, he was a very spiritual guy. A little strange, but AA is not a hotbed of mental health. He said he walked into a liquor store one time, and he could hear the alcohol whispering in a low tone. And I believe that Charlie really heard that. Now, they've never talked to me, and I don't remember the last time I've been in a liquor store. It's funny, though. It doesn't really allure me, but I usually, if possible, I tiptoe through the beer and the wine aisle. I scoot through as quickly as possible, not to linger. Why is alcohol so devastating? Why? Is it because we're weak people, like if we could just quit on our own? A lot of people do. They can't really seem to understand that. They just don't. They, you know, can't you just stop? You know, your wife is pregnant and you got kids and you're going to lose your job. And can't you just stop? I don't understand. It goes to the point where you actually lose the ability to do that. I know some people it's hard to understand that phenomenon of losing agency or free will. Now, once you've worked the 12 steps, even after, no matter how far down the scale you have gone, and some of us have gone pretty far down, no matter how far, if they're willing to be honest. I've seen people with all kinds of mental maladies, mental and spiritual maladies, as long as they have the capacity to be honest, have gotten well. Schizophrenics, bipolar disorder, all kinds of manic depressives. I mean, just, I think that's repetitive, but that kind of issues come back around and have a life that they would have never had before. They would have either been in insane asylums, or they would have been in jail, or they would have been dead. The spiritual life and a life in recovery versus death, incarceration, insanity. And believe it or not, for the real alcoholic, that's not always an easy decision. There was a movie that was not too long ago, Leaving Las Vegas, with Cage. What's his name? Stephen Cage. I forget. Snake Eyes. What's his name? That'll come. He's in Las Vegas and he's an alcoholic and he's going to Las Vegas to die from alcohol. Alcohol kills more people than any other drug. That's amazing, isn't it? Crack cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, morphine, the designer drugs. Alcohol kills more than any of them. There's more alcoholic overdoses than anything else. Now, I don't know if they throw in the drunk driving fatalities in with that number, because that would balance it all out, or just anaphylactic shock, going into shock. I've had two daughters die from this disease. Julianne, about 9 years ago, died from an overdose on morphine. She was more of a drug addict than an alcoholic. She liked her drugs. Christina, my youngest daughter, I had five daughters, and Christina died 3 years ago this past May of overdosed on ethyl alcohol, methamphetamine, and cocaine. My experience with that, it was really the alcohol. The methamphetamine and the cocaine put her brain in a certain situation where most people would have passed out from the alcohol. But because of the other drugs in there, the switch that normally would have shut that off could not be activated. So she got to the point of overdose, and that's it. Everything shuts down. Unless you rush to the hospital immediately, you're a goner. And her sister found her, Libby. I think she was dead a day or two when they found the body. I think, now this is the rumor, and I hadn't really pursued it. My ex-wife, you know, looking for somebody to blame, was there was a mother and daughter with her doing the drugs with her, which is very possible. I think Christina was probably trying to show off how much she could do. She was a little girl, too, very pretty. And I think she probably overdid it to show off, and that's what killed her. And then the mother and the daughter, and like I said, this is just a rumor. We don't know for sure, and nobody's pursued it, and I don't see what the point would be. you know, vengeance, what are you going to do with something like that? You put alcohol and drug in your body, basically you're opting to die. That's it. Some people have taken a drink of alcohol and I guess they've dropped dead. I know I have cocaine. I know some folks have taken one hit of cocaine and stopped their heart and they died. So anytime you take a drink or you do put alcohol in your body, there's an optum to die. So, of course, some people drink, you know, socially. You know, they have alcohol like that. They have a couple, three drinks sometimes. They get drunk on New Year's Eve. I had a buddy of mine that was a alcoholic, a biker. Nice guy. Get his name now. Anyway, he would say, he said he would never go out driving on New Year's Eve. And I said, why? You know, he's amateur night, because all the amateurs were out there drinking and driving. He says it was way too dangerous. So during the week, you know, when during regular times, your drunks are out there, and it's dangerous as it is. But you get used to anything, and a drunk really doesn't know he's that impaired. I know people that would, when you're driving, you had so much alcohol in you, the lines, you would see two lines in the road. There's only one line, but you're seeing two lines. So the only way you can navigate the automobile is that you'd have to close one eye. And now you see one line. So now you know, and you drive that way. You would drive with one eye open. If somebody asked you, are you okay? Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm fine. No problem. And, you know, and then things happen when your reaction time, there is no reaction time, and green lights turn red lights and red lights turn green lights and yellow lights. Sometimes you can't tell for sure. You get involved in a conversation or your mind is going a million miles an hour and, you know, and you didn't notice it. You know what I mean? You couldn't stop in time and people die. You die, you get crushed and some people come in, that's how they come in. They come in after a bad car accident. They've been put in jail. That brings a lot of folks in. Not as many as you would think, though. One girl I remember, she comes in. She was the first time in jail. Nice family, everything else other than the alcohol. She got put in jail, spent a couple days in jail. Maybe not even a couple, maybe a day in jail. And it shook her up. She was coming to AA with a vengeance. She was going to get this. She was so embarrassed by going to jail with those jailbirds. She never perceived herself coming to that end. I think she lasted about 90 days. I think it was about 90 days, and she was gone. So fear doesn't do it. And, of course, the next time this would happen, she knew what to expect, and it wouldn't be as bad. So it wouldn't be as frightening the second time or the third time or the fourth time. There was a fellow up in Cedar Park at the Hope Group, and he was an air conditioning guy. And he was out. He had six DWIs and did a couple years. And, of course, the penalties have been getting stiffer and stiffer as time, and the cost is going higher and higher. But that's not going to stop anybody. See, it's one thing they don't really get. I mean, the state's making a lot of money, and the lawyers are making a lot of money, and the judges are staying busy. But this really doesn't stop people from drinking. Consequences do not. They're going to hit that wall, and until they hit that wall, wherever that wall may be, they're going to continue on and on and on, Anonymous, until they've hit bottom. Where that bottom is, everybody's different. There's no telling. That's why I ask the question, have you had enough? Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? See, if they're not at least to that agreement, they're not ready. They're just not ready. They're going to go to the meetings, and the meetings will keep you sober. That was my experience. I started working the first steps because I was in a lot of pain. Went to a really bad divorce. It was bad. When I say bad, I mean bad. And jail, you know, trying to put me in an insane asylum, closed my business, took all my money, 12 years. It was tough. It was tough. And I wasn't a kid. I think I was 50 when I started over again. And it was real hard. And I loved the woman, you know, not at the time. We stayed together a year even after that, but that was because I was trying to talk her into not pressing charges on the assault. As soon as that was over, man, I said, I'll see you. I'm out of here. But I always cared for the woman, even though it was kind of tumultuous. I'm an alcoholic. And where was I? So we try to find out where the person's at. Have they had enough? It has to be really bone-crushing. I'm sorry to have to tell you that, but a lot of family, you'll see them come in with their sons and their daughters. Mom takes them into the open meetings and, you know, like they're going to carry this kid around until they get it. And, you know, if it works for them, that's great. My experience is you come in on your own. When you're ready, you come in on your own. Mom can't take you. Dad can't take you. I mean, they can. And if it works for you, that's great. But I know I had to come in alone. And it was a scary place. I was talking to a fella tonight. He had like 3-day relapse, and he had 3 days. And he's got 5 kids, and they live in another state. I think they're in Louisiana, Nolens. I'm going to say it right, Nolens. And we talked a little bit, and I could talk to him in a way that no one else could talk to him. Because I had 5 kids. And I could tell him what he was going to look at down the road about my 2 daughters dying from this disease because I wasn't there. And that he had an opportunity that they were still young to make a difference in their lives. He got teary-eyed, and I could tell that he was listening to what I had to say. That's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. Why him? Why me? That's how God works. He puts us together with the people that we need to hear from. A good AA meeting is when you hear something you needed to hear. A great AA meeting is when someone else says, when you say something someone else needed to hear. So that made my night because I could see I touched him and that now he was ready to do something. If not for him, for his children, but it's for him. It is for him because he could feel the pain. I could see his pain coming out. He was barely in his own skin. I says, because that's the way I was, and I was relating to how I felt. I would be mad when people were laughing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we laugh all the time. We have a great time sometimes. We really do. You hear things that you'll never hear anywhere else. Funny, funny things about some of our shenanigans and things, and then since we can relate to that, it's really funny. If you said the same thing to people who've never been in those circumstances, I don't believe it would be that funny. You might get a chuckle or something that's sort of like a gratuitous chuckle, but when you live life like that and you can see the actual circumstances of that behavior, it's funny. And we love to laugh. We love to have a good time. We are not a glum lot. In our fourth tradition, it talks about building this edifice to alcoholism and when it all came falling down, because that's not the way it was supposed to work. It's one guy helping. If you want to change the world, you help one guy at a time, one girl at a time. Guys with guys, girls with girls. It's not about romance. This is about life and death. If you want to change the world, you help one person. If you think you're going to change the world with some grandiose thought, that's all it is. It's grandiosity or politics. It could be religion, too. You want to change the world, you help one person. Just one. Help the next guy. Help the next girl. Nobody has to even know about it. All that has to know about it is you, him, and God. More than enough, more than sufficient. I do this because I can. I know this is going to help a lot of people with the website. I know down the road, these archives probably will be played. Maybe, you know, maybe very few people listening right now. That's fine. Down the road, hopefully other people will be listening and they'll be glad to hear what I had to say. I'm glad that I had to say it, you know, that God's given me a gift. This is a gift that I can be of maximum service to him and my fellows. That's a gift from God. There's no doubt about it. All that has come before me has molded me to this work. Now, it's a good work, but the credit for the work goes to God and the fellowship. If as long as I don't put Joseph ahead of that, this will work. It's really about God. I like the Hebrews when they say, there's God, there's only God. And that's it. In the big book it says, God was everything or he was nothing. Wow. What was our choice to be? God was either everything or he was nothing. And what was our choice to be? Our choice was we had to believe in God. Some people still have a hard time with the word, more and more now than ever before. More and more people have fallen away. You know, I went on a dating site not too long ago, and a lot of the ladies put on there as their requirement, I'm spiritual, not religious. And I hooked up with this Jewish lady, and I said, well, you know, actually I'm looking for somebody who's religious but not spiritual. In AA, we like to say, religion is for people who don't want to go to hell. Spirituality is for people who've already been there. And most of the people, when they come into AA and they're serious, they've been to hell and back. I lived in hell for a very long time. And I was comfortable in hell. That's people don't understand. I was comfortable living in hell. I knew where all the light switches were. I knew what to expect. And I was okay there. You know, you'll get used to anything. What did Mark Twain say? He says, every place has something in its favor. Heaven for the scenery and hell for the company. Rum Radio is a good work. I hope you folks get a chance to look at it. If you have any comments about it, it's been around the world. We're in 98-plus countries. I've been in most of these United States and some foreign countries, including Mississippi. Some foreign countries, including Mississippi. And found that AA is the same all over the place. We, you know, a little different way. The serenity prayer, and we start with a prayer, which is usually the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the wisdom to know. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can. And then we end, that's an invocation, and we end with the Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Sorry, originally I was a Catholic, so and then all AA meetings are gratitude meetings, no matter what the spin is. And an attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. So if you're grateful, it's a prayer. Be grateful for the day. Zig Ziglar says, if you don't think you're having a great day, just try missing one. Well, thank you so much for listening, and down the road, I hope you get something out of this. If you know someone who's in the program and they need some encouragement, please direct them towards Rum Radio. So I'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org.